regular meeting. Approval of minutes, I'd like to move approval of minutes of the regular meeting, April 16th, the budget hearing May 8th, and the budget vote on May 15th.
Second.
Second, Howard, all those in favor? I'm sorry, any discussion? Go to the mic, it was too sensitive, I just put it in. Those in favor? And no opposed. First public comment session. Ronnie?
Could you please use your microphones?
Sorry.
And you would have talked later.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Okay, superintendent administrator reports. I will turn my microphone on myself, so we can hear this.
No problem. First thing is, we had asked Randy Sika to come for transportation, give us an overview of what we've done in the past. So, you want to go first, Randy? You can go to the mic, yeah, it'd be easier to hear.
Okay.
I think it's on. You gotta press the button. Red light.
How's that?
Perfect.
Okay, thank you for inviting me to the meeting tonight. I'm basically here just to give you an overview of the management of the fleet. And one of the key things that we have to do in fleet management is have a replacement bus cycle. The reason for that being, once they reach 10 years or 100,000 miles, the maintenance cost to keep them on the road goes up exponentially. The buses cost us about $1.50 a mile to run during the course of their regular fleet cycle of 10 years. But once they get to that 10-year mark, we have bus inspections done by the New York State DOT, which are very, very stringent. They're done every 6 months, and the buses are critiqued inside and out. I mean, right down to the last light bulb in the dash and so on and so forth. After 10 years, they'll run a lot longer, but the life cycle of the bodies start to deteriorate, and the cost to maintain the bodies and keep those buses going, it becomes very expensive. And the reason for that being, when they're in their regular life cycle, they run 10,000 miles. So you get that money back out of the buses. But once you've reached the 10-year cycle, we only run our spare buses 1,000 to 2,000 miles a year. We have to have spare buses to cover buses that are out on athletic trips or buses that are in for repair and so on and so forth. A repair such as we just had a 7-year bus come in. It was in for inspection. They found that one of the body supports had started to deteriorate to a point where they recommended we replace it. Well, we were talking about $250 a parts, $1,000 repair, but the bus will still be in service another 3 years. And you can get the money back out of that repair. Case in point with our spare buses, we had a bus that we just traded in last year. Once they get to about 10 years, they're only worth between $1,500 and $2,000. And the bus had to have a transmission. We had to keep it in service and keep it running and to keep using it. Well, we had a $4,000 repair bill on that bus 2 years ago. When we traded it in, we got $1,500 for it, and it doesn't make fiscal sense. Our whole goal is to reduce the operating expense of the buses, or the repair expense, so to speak. Buying new buses, replacing new buses, what we do is we take a bus that's at the 10-year cycle, and in most cases they reach 100,000 miles. We make them spares. The spares get traded in on two new buses that we're going to procure. One of the advantages of replacing the buses, I'll give you three examples, but the warranty on the new buses is about 7 years, 5 to 7 years. The newest ones are 7. The district is off the hook as far as repair expense for most anything that happens to either the body, the structure, and the powertrain of the bus. All we have for expense are oil filters, normal service work, brakes, tires, and that type of thing for 7 years. So It reduces our expense as far as what we're doing for major repairs. Fuel savings. The two newest buses we got last year have the newest technology, engine technology, emissions technology. The buses that we are replacing get about 6.5 miles to the gallon. And I figured over 10,000 miles, at 6.5 miles to the gallon, it's about 1,540 gallons of fuel. The new buses at 8.5 miles to the gallon, over 10,000 miles, is about 1,176 gallons of fuel. It's a difference of 362 gallons a year. But at the current price of 367, we're looking at about $1,328 per bus savings just in the fuel from the buses we replace. Over the life cycle or 10-year life cycle of those buses, we're looking at saving the district about $13,285 just in fuel savings, not to mention the savings in repair costs. The other thing, and this is just a feature that we've gotten on our buses since 2007, is engine brake. You've probably heard the Jake brake on the tractor trailers and so on and so forth. Well, the engine brake allows us to, allows the drivers to not have to use the brakes in the bus to slow the vehicle down. It's a great safety feature, especially for our mountain buses and so on and so forth. Over the normal life cycle of our older buses, we have to do brake jobs 3 or 4 times at a cost of between $1,200 and $1,500 in parts. With the engine brake, we have our 2007 buses have got 50,000 miles on them. They still have the original brakes, and we may only be changing, doing a complete brake job on those buses once during the time they're in our fleet. So there's a that's a big plus. So I mean, the bottom line is we're trying to minimize our maintenance cost on the buses. That's a big deal, and I think that we've done a really good job up to this point. And I'm going to leave it at that. The last thing that I would like to just pass by you, and this is something that's a trend in our industry. I just got this in an email Friday. It's from a publication called School Bus Fleet, and it's about a private contractor in New Jersey. And there are a lot of public entities like ourselves that have done this in New York State and all over the country, but this was a nice illustration. They run an 80 bus fleet, and they brought in a new maintenance manager, and they had been trading their buses at 7, 8, 9, 10 year cycles. And the new fellow that came in decided that from his past experience with an outfit in California, that they would like to replenish their fleet at a 20% replacement cycle every year, so that after 5 years, the oldest bus in their fleet is 5 years old. Now, the upfront cost is a little bit more, but what he's looking at, and what I keep going back to, is maintenance cost, especially for the older buses. With their fleet, once they get to the end of that 5 year cycle where there's nothing older than 5 years, they're looking at saving just under $250,000 in maintenance costs. And when they trade their buses in, and this is something Vince and I have talked about, you know, there's been a lot of talk about 5 year cycles. When you trade the buses in at 5 or 7 years, you get 40 to 60% of the cost of the bus back towards your initial purchase. So instead of, say, in our case, we spent $100,000 just for a round figure on a bus, we may only have to bond for $40,000 or $60,000. But the not to divert, but you know, the maintenance cost, the bottom line is the savings in the maintenance cost, and that seemed pretty substantial to me.
There are other school districts that have talked about doing a five-year replacement, but it's the initial cost that's killing it. So what Randy's saying, we only get $1,000 for trade-in after 10 years, we could probably get about 40% trade-in. So it would be to our advantage from that standpoint, save some of the expenditures, still get rid of the bus when it's under warranty, so the second person would be willing to pay a little bit more for it. But that's something that obviously it's only a pie in the sky at this point. There's no way that we can even consider
that's right. If we can just stick to our normal cycle, yeah. and we've missed that two out of the last 4 years. We got them this year, but two out of the past 4 years put us behind. So we've got more buses in the 100,000 mile range with more years on them than we ever have in the past.
Can I just ask a question? You said you get 40% to 50% back on a bus if it's only 5 years old?
That's correct.
40% of the cost?
The original cost of the bus, yes.
Which appreciation would not be as great.
I wish I could do that with my cars.
And that's without factoring in the state aid part of it, right? So,
correct.
Yes.
You said 100, but then we'll get aid for it. So it's almost like after aid, we basically, it seems like it costs us nothing if we can get 40 or 60.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, if we get, right now, this year, our aid is going to be 66%. So we'd be getting 66% of 50,000 rather than 100,000. It would be a lot less.
They would factor in the trade-in when you go to reimbursement, because they'll pay you. What they do now is if it's 100,000, we get 1,500 for it. They deduct that when they calculate. Then they, because we're financing them, they'll add in the bond council and the interest. So it'll work out to the same thing. They'll aid us on what we're basically using in the vehicle.
Randy, you can become an evangelist for this 5-year plan. Start talking it up.
Yeah, well, Vince and I have had this discussion. There have been other districts. There's one other district, and I don't know that they do this now, but I believe Mechanicville a number of years ago they actually turned in their whole fleet and went on a 5-year lease. Now, I don't know that that's even possible anymore with the laws and regulations and what have you, but they were flipping their fleet every 5 years. So they basically had virtually no major repair costs, just normal, routine maintenance.
Andy, can you give us a general idea of how vulnerable we are? I know we were behind for a couple years. We did okay this year and last year. Just a few weeks ago, I happened to be over by the bus garage, and I saw a bus being towed in. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 116, which is one of our newer buses.
That's right.
I mean, are we at a place right now where, I guess, just how close are we to any kind of...
It's not a good situation, and we hold our breath. The two buses that we were going to take out of service and make spares, one of them, they're both 10 years old. One has 118,000 miles, and one has, I believe, 111 or 112,000 miles. They're in that prime range where we see major things happen, whether it's a transmission failure, and not a transmission failure from a lack of maintenance. The ones that we have had were actually a hard failure, like the main shaft broke, and there's nothing you can do about that or prevent it from happening. The body repairs, we are very fortunate. We've got a crackerjack guy that we hired last year that is fabulous at doing body work now. But even though we have him in house and we still have to make buy the parts, and body panels, structural panels, structural parts, and all that kind of thing are very expensive. I mean, we did a number of rear panels that wrap around the back of the bus last year. They're $600 or $800, and then the labor to install them and do the paint and so on and so forth. So, we're going to be faced with a lot of that, I think, in the next couple of years, particularly if we're not as fortunate as we are this year. And we don't get them in the next couple of years because we are behind. So it's very important that we get, good PR out. And I give Beth a lot of credit. She's done a great job this year and last year. We just need to keep plugging away and get this fleet back. We were at one point at a true 10-year cycle where buses were coming out at 8 or 9 years and they were being traded in at 10. Now we've got buses that are up to 14-year level, and 15 years is basically the life, it's what they consider the life cycle of a bus. And we're now encroaching on that. Years ago, when I first came into this business and I was a mechanic in the shop, we had a lot of 15-year-old buses and we had a lot of repair work. We spent a lot of money. And what I'm looking at in the future is trying to contain those costs. That's the thing that's going to make this whole thing keep working for us over the years is containing the maintenance cost. And so.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Randy.
Yep, you're welcome.
I just have a couple other things. I sent an email out to the assessors today and asked if we could get together with the assessors and the town supervisors of at least the three larger township, White Creek, Cambridge, and Jackson. All three of those add up to just over 90% of the district, just so we could get together and get on the same page. The email went out because I had spoken to Jen Lund. We went down to Senator Little's office, and Jen got back to me today. And the Office of Real Property Services at New York State is saying that we have a strong residential appreciation. In the town of White Creek, 10% of the changes were physical changes. Cambridge, 5% were physical changes. They didn't mention anything in Jackson, so I'm assuming that's the same. All the other increases are due to market value increases. And I have a concern with that. That's why I would like to see sit with the assessors. I've also invited Bill McCarty, who is Washington County Office of Real Property Services as well. It's not that I want to point fingers or anything. I want us all to be on the same page so we all know what's happening and how our combined wealth ratio has been affected by it. Tentatively, the equalization rates have gone up for next year, which means, again, our total true value will decrease. If they go up, there's an inverse relationship. And if that's the case, Jen was talking about trying to get Senator Little to sponsor a bill. There's a senator out in the western part of New York State that's sponsoring a bill for her community that has no waterfront property. And what it would do is it would take the current assessed valuations or true value, as opposed to us using a three-year lag where it's still high. So if that's the case, that should benefit us as well. So I'll wait to hear and keep you updated on whether or not we can get that meeting together. There's a board workshop that Jeff Honeywell will do for the new board members and over the summer. He's available between July 23rd and August 6th. I think the 23rd is what we had agreed to. So I just have to find a time when he would be available.
And Vince, I think everybody's available during the day.
Okay.
Doesn't have to be an evening.
Okay. All right. That would probably work out better. Most of his meetings with boards are at night, so if he can come out during the day, it'd be great. And the other thing, and I don't know if you want to make a decision now or I can just communicate back to the Booster Club. I got an email today, and they asked whether or not the money that they're going to try to raise to reinstate the sports had to be done by season or in total. It would be my recommendation that we take it in bits and pieces as opposed to a total amount. So season would be my recommendation. I don't know if there has to be an official vote or anything. Just I can communicate that back to them now. So depending on how the board feels with that.
And we've said it 14 times, but they'll be collecting money, and then the school decides how it's going to go for. Any money they collect will be for sports.
Correct. We will determine. They should be aware of that, but I will reiterate that.
Well, we've said it 14 times.
Yeah.
We will be using it for sports.
For sports. Yeah. But the levels, if we don't have enough money, that's what we're talking about. Other than that, I think I'm done. Wants to go first.
An update on APPR progress and the rubric in particular. We had a half day when the teachers and Colleen and I met on May 10th, and we made a lot of progress on the rubric development. We're working on domain 4, which is probably one of the more cut and dry portions of it, but we made a lot of progress on domains 2 and 3 on that half day. So we're making progress toward completing that rubric, as well as the SLO development that's going on at BOCES. BOCES has agreed to kind of spearhead a regional assessment development program where they're having consultants come in and getting experts from the field, getting teachers to come in and write assessment questions. based on those questions, they will do all the psychometrics with the test questions that they need to, and they're creating a test bank for each of the courses where we potentially might need an SLO. That's going to be particularly helpful at the secondary, where we have a lot of courses. For instance, there are assessments we could purchase for ninth grade math, but that ninth grade math is generic. It's not necessarily, we have ninth graders who are taking algebra, and we also have ninth graders who are taking geometry. Ninth grade math measurement is a little more generic than that. So these regional assessments that are being developed by BOCES and the teachers within the BOCES will really help us not only avoid purchasing a third-party assessment, but also give us a more accurate measure of what's actually being taught in the courses rather than just a generic course name. Rubicon Atlas on superintendent.
Yep. Sure. SLO is student learning opportunity.
Student learning objective.
Objective, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay. I've gotten confused on what the timetable is for the APPR. When are we required to have things done?
Everything is supposed to be in place for September. July 1st is the date for a lot of the documents to be completed. We're working toward that, but realistically, it's going to probably not be July 1st. I would say in the BOCES of all the conversation that I've heard, we're probably somewhere in the middle of the pack. There are districts who haven't even begun to discuss the rubric with their teachers. So some schools are way out ahead of this. Some schools haven't even begun the discussions. So I think we've been plugging away at it, and we're making good progress.
Is there a financial penalty if we don't?
Not until January. I think it's January 17th.
They're saying that we have to have it submitted by July, September at the absolute latest in order for it to be approved by January. I don't understand how they're going to have everybody in and reviewed by January. It just makes no sense. Boston Spa is the one that's doing the pilot, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Boston Spa is doing a pilot, and some of the questions that they're getting back from the state now are just absolutely off the wall. That, you know, it's, they're having problems with it. They're still working through and doing it and resubmitting them and redoing them, but maybe this is just my opinion. I think you're going to find that even if they're in and approved and by January, you're still going to see more reviews after the fact, and things will be critical as to whether or not they have to change. They've started doing a process that they really didn't know about. Tammy and Colleen went Monday to a training, 2 weeks ago? The part three of the mm-hmm. teachers. I went Wednesday and it already changed. Thursday they came out with a state clarification. And Kyle, you're going June 6th? He's going June 6th to the same one. I'm sure he'll be better educated than the other three of us. Because it just seems to be the last person standing is the one that gets the most changes. Some of the things that happened at the first meeting on Monday, they already corrected by the time it got to us and they told us. And it's a joke because there's too many things that are left unanswered. So many times we ask a question, they say, well, that's a good question. We have to ask the state and get back to you. So, and that's what supposedly that Thursday clarification was answering some of the questions. So, but I'm optimistic we'll have something, whether or not it will get in before July 1st. I don't, yeah, Carl's shaking his head. I was going to say, I don't think that's feasibility.
But you guys are still all speaking to one another,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a civil
It's not process. Contentious. It's just there's too much. Do you want to say something
well,
about
it? Well, it's the group of 10, 4 high school, 4 elementary, plus Tammy and Colleen, I think have an excellent working relationship. It's just so overbearing. You know, there's schools, the big schools, they have assistant superintendents that are just, you know, can do that. And we're just trying to do it on the side. And as Mr. Panini said, they're changing things along the way. It's still very fluid, and then there's all the pieces. I think the biggest part is the observation instrument, which we made really good headway on this Wednesday. I'm hoping to, after school, finish up the last of that. But then there's all these other pieces, and then the biggie is bringing it all to you, and it has to be negotiated. Chunks of it. So that'll be interesting as well, but it affects the timetable of it. that extra money that they made available for school districts, to me, was a joke, because they said by July 1, but, and in Washington County, we're not only in the middle, I think we're like, we have a group of Washington County schools that meet, and we're towards the front of that group, as far as having made progress with this. But it is quite a cumbersome thing. But it will be in place for September. I'm very optimistic about that.
Thank you. Thank you for the efforts.
Rubicon update. We Superintendent's Conference Day on Tuesday. Teachers who have been trained will be training their colleagues in the kind of nuts and bolts of how to do the data input, how to manipulate the maps, how to access them, and actually develop the maps. So teachers are going to be working at the elementary, and then at the high school, they're going to be working within grade level and departments to develop some of the maps for those consensus maps, those ones that are going to be consistent from teacher to teacher. So that's going to be happening on Tuesday, and the plans are in place for that to go on. Testing, AP testing is coming to a close, or has come to a close. We're getting ready to start up the performance test for grade 8 in science, and that will be followed by the written test in grade 8 science. And 3-3 testing is done, but the field testing lives on. We have a third grade or an eighth grade assessment field test coming the first week in June. We're going to be administering that. We had ELA 11 physics and algebra 2 trig field testing as well at the end of last week and into this week. The last of those will be algebra 2 trig that will wind up on Thursday. So the field testing is hopefully going to wrap up before the region's boxes end up rolling in. So we'll see if we can get everything coordinated out before we have more coming in. The academic fair, I thought, was very well received. I want to thank the teachers and the students for their efforts in all that they did, not only to produce the work, but also getting the work put up and the work taken down. I saw many kids carrying many boxes back and forth to the auditorium after school and before school, setting up those displays, as well as the teachers who set up those displays. There was a lot of kind of hands-on work going on, not only on the creation of the projects, but the setup. Congratulations for the National Latin exam results. Gold medal winners were J.B. Baker-Porzynski, Olivia Mooney, and Michaela Woodcock. They were all recognized as summa cum laude recipients. Skills USA, which is the VOTEC, the CTE state level competition, we had a student, Jack Davis, who is one of our seniors, placed first in New York State in heavy equipment and qualified for the national competition in Kansas City. So that was a huge accomplishment. He was very humble and didn't say anything about it. Some of his friends tipped me off, but he was very low key.
Excuse me, Tammy. Kansas City. Who pays for him to get out there?
If he decides to go, it's on a scholarship basis. And if he decided to further his education, he is qualified for a $5,000 scholarship based on his performance at the state level. So well deserved.
They didn't notify us of this, did they?
No, I stalked their website. Okay. It's on their website, but I had to do a little digging around. Also, congratulations to Ms. Nesbitt and Ms. Starr and the class of 2013 for the prom, the coronation, the prom at the Queensbury Hotel, and then the after-prom party at the YMCA. From start to finish, I think it was about a 15-hour extravaganza, but everything went very, very well. So the advisors and the students deserve congratulations on that. And the last thing, when I put the board report together, is there's actually been an update. U.S. News and World Report ranked 22,000 schools across the nation. In the initial report that came out, Cambridge ranked about 1,600, and then Vince sent me an update that it was really closer to 1,300. There were only a few local schools that were mentioned in the report, but out of 22,000 schools, to rank about 1,300 is quite an accomplishment. That's all I have.
Yeah. Okay, this was a good question. The treasurer report reflects the month of April. State aid continues to flow in. The month usually reflects it's quite balanced. And if there's no questions, it's really not, we're right where we should be this time of the year. At this point, we'll start to freeze purchase orders, start to go through liquidate, take a good hard look at them, see where we land at the end of the year. There is one budget transfer for English as a second language. At the time of the budget season last year, we had one student. We didn't feel that he was going to have the needs. And then we had two students that at the beginning of the year. BOCES took a while to catch up with this. I thought I might get away with it, but we didn't. So this is what this budget transfer is to cover that cost.
What is English as a second language?
When you have children who come in that don't speak English as their first language, we have to give them extra help to bring them up to speed. And I also would like to thank the Cambridge community for their outpouring of support for the budget. And that's really all I have.
And Colleen Lester is not here tonight. She had a family commitment. And if there's anything with the elementary report, email me or Colleen and we'll answer any questions that you might have. But other than that, we're done.
You just mentioned the community. Let me throw one more thing out at you. We had 1,200 people vote in our election. And if you add up the total votes from Hoosick Falls, Greenwich, and Salem, they had 1,600. You have tremendous, tremendous involvement with the school district. I mean, we passed the budget. That's great. But to have that number of people come out, I think it's phenomenal. So again, thank you. I'll stop saying thank you after that.
I won't.
Yeah, exactly.
Board reports. Howard, you want to start?
Every year, Washington County Parks Department gives us permission to use the county park at Lake Lauderdale. They turn the bathrooms on for us in May, and we've got the park. I have the keys to the gate. And we had the entirety of the kindergarten go up the other day, and we had a great day with them and did some ecology and some critter capturing and things like that. And we ended up doing it on one day rather than two because we had a very rainy day, as you'll remember. And so I said, well, let's bring them all up. So they brought them all up, and the teachers were excellent. The kids were great, and we had a lot of fun. Well, second grade is all going up in the first week of June. We have a very nice facility up there, and I'd like to see it extend a little bit more, but Vince has also assured me that now with the passage of the budget, our summer science program is a go. We've done that for the last 5 or 6 years, and we've had 8 or 9 different teachers be involved in that. Carl, sitting back there, did 2 summers with it, and he did a great job, but we've also had some other people, and lately it's been a couple of kindergarten teachers. But we have 31 families who have given us checks, and I'll be going up to do a program in Salem here next week, and we're going to see if we can round up some kids from Valita McLenathan's class and see if they'll join us. They did last year, and Jane Lurie was very kind about bringing those kids down every day. And we do 5 days. It's all outdoor stuff, and the last day is at the Salem Fish and Game Club, where I bring in some area specialists in the environmental arena. And they do things like mist netting the birds, and West Nile virus unit comes up and shows the kids how they draw blood and how that disease is transmitted. We have a fly fisherman come up, Mike Bodnar, who has kids in school, does a woods unit with the kids. And Ken Fassine's going to do some fly fishing with us this year. And Steve Butts and I do a river analysis with the kids. We have a permit from the Conservation Department, scientific collector's permit, that allows us to take small numbers of stream organisms, and the kids learn how to identify them. So it's a real excellent program to get the kids outdoors. And I know that at least one or two of the other board members are as concerned about this as I am, and I think we need to get kids outdoors more than we are now. And as I do all these area schools, most of the teachers that I work with are as concerned as I am. It's something that we've really got to focus on, because we have tremendous numbers of new invasives coming in, and we're seeing changes in temperatures and changes in water quality, and the beat goes on. So anyway, I'm very happy to see that we can do that program again this summer. Thank you.
Or you can have your kids come pull garlic mustard in my house. Get rid of those invasives.
Yeah, especially those melanic opossums.
It's delicious. Yeah. It's obnoxious.
William? I'd just like to thank Randy Seeker for coming tonight. This is kind of my request to be here. So I thank you very much. It was very helpful.
I wanted to congratulate our two new board members. We have Kevin Lyon joining us and Carrie Brown. I think we got lucky this year, not only to have two fantastic board members get elected, but to even have people who wanted to be a part of this, because it's, we may make it look fun, I don't know, but it's a lot of hard work.
We got promised a big salary.
So thank you in advance.
Thank you, Bob.
And continuing with the thank yous, I wanted to, I just wanted to highlight Carl's here, and we talked about the APPR a little bit, and I just wanted to highlight for people the kind of the big picture of what's going on and how functional it is here as opposed to dysfunction. The APPR, for those of you who don't know, is a huge, huge mandate. It was a mandate that got passed after mandate relief was announced. So we were told we were going to get some significant relief in mandates. We've gotten no relief in mandates. We've gotten at least two new ones, APPR being the biggest. And it's basically the state telling us how to evaluate teachers. And if we don't like it, tough luck for us. We have to do it exactly the way pretty much they say. And we have to, as Tammy alluded to, we have to negotiate how we're going to do that. But the negotiations have to be their way. One of the things that's been wonderful behind the scenes is this hardworking committee of our teachers and our administrators that have been meeting, and from everything I understand, it's been going very smoothly. And this is some very, very difficult, potentially contentious stuff. I think it's an excellent reflection of our district that we're able to do this, so that when we finally do sit down at the table, it's not going to be as adversarial as it will be in some other districts, where administrators say it has to be this way, and teachers say you're crazy, it's going to be this way. Meanwhile, there's this ticking clock of significant state aid that's tied to this, the loss of significant state aid, which we really can't afford anymore. So I want to thank the administrators, and I want to thank the teachers for that. That stuff behind the scenes, above and beyond what they do in the classrooms every day. And that's all on a volunteer basis. That's just people stepping up and saying, hey, you know what, this is important. I want to make sure this is done right. And they're doing it. The other thing I want to thank for, and we're going to be voting on this later, so I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I think it's really important to highlight this in the specific context of teachers stepping up. We had, as we all know, a very difficult budget season. One of the things we cut were the extracurricular programs. It was a very difficult decision that we made, a significant amount of money. It really hurt to do it. It would have made this district a significantly less effective district, and less pleasant, less attractive, let's put it that way. Even though those things are outside of the curriculum and outside of the academic sphere for the most part, they still are important. The teachers initiated, and through the basically the goodness of their hearts, had offered to, for next year, basically reinstate almost all of those. We're going to be providing stipends for the ones that involve significant outside time, but the rest of them are going to be done within the school day. So we're going to be getting them back. So that's wonderful enough, but even better than that, they basically freed us up a little bit so that if students want to initiate new extracurricular activities, clubs, what have you, this year, if students approach us, we basically have to say, no, we can't, there's stipends involved, we don't have a budget, and I'm sorry. Next year, we're going to have a situation where if students approach us, if it's a worthwhile experience, we're going to be able to do that. So we're actually going to be able to expand those things. And teachers are also kind enough to agree that if there's not a teacher who is interested or available to be an advisor in a given club, you can use outside volunteers to do that. So really, if you think about it, what's happened here, in a situation that could have been absolutely, you know, hurtful to the district, it's turned out to be a very it's turned out to be an improvement. And again, I have to reiterate this: it's thanks to the teachers' goodwill. They're willing to sacrifice and they're willing to make this a better place. And I just wanted to make sure that gets said. That's it.
Howard, I had one more
thing. I just had one more thing to say, and that is tomorrow's the big day. We're taking Steve Butz's AP environmental group down to Yale. They're going to be seeing 8 of the scientists. We're going to rotate the kids every 20 minutes down there. It's a nice itinerary for them. But I also wanted to mention that this is quite an event in another way, too, because Randy did a great job with the bus analysis tonight. And Randy and I have something in common, that being that Randy graduated in the class of 1979, and I was his class advisor. And he's promised me that tomorrow he's going to give me a bus that'll get all the way down there and back, that we don't have to take. Thank you, Randy.
In tow or not?
Yeah.
thank you.
This has been a good day for me. I called up Kate this morning looking for notes on this technology committee meeting because I stared at this paper all week and I said I should put it with my board stuff, and of course I didn't. And of course I couldn't find it today. Do you know I don't have it yet? You sent me your notes and I don't have it. So Kyle, do you remember what happened the last, there was the IP phones, AgileNet, and class notes going to the cloud. Those are the three things I remember.
They were talking about the current computer system we use is ClassLink, which is also hosted on our servers locally and through them. They're talking about doing the big push to having everything based in the cloud, which will basically result in a reduction of cost that we will have for server use and for maintenance. It is proposed that it will make the computer system here work much faster because it won't be going through the servers we have. And we did say that SchoolTool is still going to be housed on our servers, so that's all of our student management system, IEP. That will still be managed in-house, so that will not be going out public over the cloud. IP phones, they're in the process. The phones are installed. There will be training on Superintendent's Day for the secretarial staff. And the rollout is imminent, I would say. We gave an update on
GaggleNet?
Student emails. The discussion we were talking about before was a program called GaggleNet, which is a free student email system, but it's not free because they want you to pay and buy their service, much like what ClassLink offers us now. So they are researching on trying to provide to see if we can get a free Gmail account for students, which they're still testing. But the word is that they can put a lot of controls and lockdowns on it for however we want it. And that would allow students a couple of neat things. It would give every student an email address. With the rollout of Parent Portal, students will now have the ability to log in to Parent Portal come September with their own account. It will also open up the Web 2.0 features of interacting with real-time documents where Vince and I could be working on the same document in Google Docs, and it's real-time changes because of that collaboration that Gmail offers. You basically get the whole suite. You don't just get Gmail. You get Google Docs, you get Picasa, you get everything that Google has offered with it. That is completely free, I believe, is what they were saying.
And they're doing that with added security.
Added security, beefed up whitelists. They can really say who they want the emails to go to. Do they just want it to be at cambridgecsd.org? Do they want to have it between, they can set what hours emails can be sent. They can put a lot of controls on that. The discussion will then come upon what level do we want to start the students with an email address and what functionality do we want that they have. I know we talked about the difference between a personal and a professional email address. And that was one of the things where we said it would really be, we thought it would be beneficial for all the students to have an email address because not only does it allow them to, some of the things I stated before, but even simply now there's another tool for teachers to communicate with students. Students can now email work in a manner that's not coming from, oh, I have to get on my parents' account and do this and do that. They'll have their own school account that they'll be able to use. And I think they talked Parent Portal. We are doing a demonstration at Superintendent's Conference Day. Paul has graciously allowed us to use his information, so it'll be real-time information that they will be seeing. Basically, we will be logging in as if Paul was there logging in himself, and we're going to go through, here's what a parent will see. So we'll be on a nice big screen, so if they have any questions or how it works, hopefully it'll alleviate some of the fears that's coming with that next year. And today's meeting is canceled.
You didn't
research
material, Tom.
Yes. That was much bigger than I would have done with my notes. Thank you, Tom. I would like to read something I wrote up this week. Last month, Lillian explained why she was not going to vote for the budget. The budget did pass, but there were some things that I thought needed to comment on, mistakes and other, and I'd like it clarified.
The first thing that Uli talked about were the teacher salaries and et cetera, and negotiations. And my comment, it is usual to do contract negotiations in private and as a board, not as an individual board member. We have been trying to resolve the current CFA-CCS impasse for some time, and have all been kept abreast of progress or lack thereof over that time by the superintendent and the school attorney. We have all had the opportunity to attend negotiation sessions or to provide input and make suggestions regarding these negotiations. It is out of place for an individual board member to make individual demands of the other party in public without input from the other board members or without the other party having the opportunity to respond. This is grandstanding and is at best counterproductive and will not help in reaching agreement. The next item, she would not vote for the budget because all extracurricular activities were being cut in some sports. Mr. Canini, Mr. Baker Borzinski, and I spent half of one Saturday in March talking to the coaches and athletic director advising them on how to deal with the funding crisis and the possible reduction in sports, the reduction which is now a reality. This included offering them guidelines on how the Booster Club could legally raise funds. This discussion was continued at the budget workshops to apprise the community on how they could help return cut sports programs. Mrs. Harrington should also have known that the superintendent as designated board representative was at the time of her statement in negotiations with the CFA, working out a means of returning extracurricular activities. In fact, this has been done, and these activities have been restored with an agreement between the CFA and the district with no additional costs. Everyone on this board understands the value of these activities to the education of our students, not just Mrs. Harrington, and we are happy to have the CFA help us get these back. Next point, I think other staff should be looked at when making layoffs, not just teachers. I believe the superintendent and business manager made good arguments for the staff reductions proposed and eventually agreed to by the majority of the board. Reductions which included not only instructional staff cuts, but also support staff. The school board does not run the daily operations of the district. It is the job of the salaried professionals to advise us on what they need to do that. Next point is a series of numbers of how much we have been over budgeting. Actually, this year, I guess it was, she saw a number of $776,000 in the budget. And she suggested a 15% reduction. It is unclear where the $776,000 figure comes from, and thus difficult to discuss. Supplies is a category scattered throughout the budget in the various departments and subdivisions of the school. With things like oil, electricity, and fuel costs, it is difficult to adjust to eliminate 15%. I personally believe that if it were that simple to find and cut this money, our business manager, who spends 8 hours a day looking at these numbers, would have recommended we do so. And then a whole series of numbers in the next point about how we've been over budgeting. I think we go back to 2007 or 8. Again, almost impossible numbers to respond to directly, as it is hard to see how they are derived and no justification for their accuracy is offered. It must be pointed out, however, that municipal budgets are voted on only once a year. We cannot ask the community for more money if we run short during the next school year. Since CCS can neither legally borrow money if it overspends, nor legally operate with a deficit, it would be foolish to plan a budget with no provision for some extra expenditures. I would guess that most of the surplus Mrs. Harrington thinks she sees is a direct result of the administration's pre-purchasing activities and concentrating spending in revenue incentive areas or other cost-saving plans which they have reported on to the board and the community over the past several years, or just plain luck, as with the mild winter and reduced fuel costs this year. Having some money in the fund balance has helped us keep the tax rates down until this year. Last year's tax hike was 1.5% because of the inclusion of $1.1 million from the fund balance. This would have been a good year to have several more million available to tide us over the funding crisis, as many other districts in the region apparently do. Finally, why aren't we spending more from the fund balance? The rationale behind the fund balance usage was explained in detail to the board and community at the budget workshops, and I believe discussed fully in the first several budget workshops. The majority of the board thought it prudent to follow our superintendent's recommendation and commit only 50% of our current fund balance to next year's budget. There is no indication CCS will fare any better with state aid next year than we did this year. The tax levy cap limits what we can request of the community, and while most of the board is thankful to the community for approving the 4.2% tax increase last week, we are also painfully aware that even the initial 1.8% increase last year was rejected. It is doubtful the governor and legislature of New York State will come to their senses by next year, and whatever we have in our fund balance will be put to good use, keeping us solid. And I would like that placed in the minutes of this meeting. Thank you. Okay. We move on to new business. Item A, we'd like to move approval of the consent agendas as listed in the consent agenda for personnel and the consent agenda for new business.
Second
from our discussion. I would like to thank, I think it was ProPAC, that's on page 1.4, for donating all the display boards to the academic fair. And it's very, very little thing, but Corinth is giving us a computer cart. And
they were throwing it away and they asked if anybody wanted it, so I said I would.
Right, so minor, but you know, at least the schools are talking to one another and maybe they'll lead to bigger things. All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. I'd like to move approval. I recommend the board approve the following resolution to accept a bid from LG White & Sons in the amount of $89,800 for doors and hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Second from Howard. This is the $100,000 project.
That's this year's $100,000 project.
Any discussion?
I have a question. We were going to get in touch with Bud to find out how.
It was what we talked about. The $69,000 plus the first two alternates were not accepted, so it was just three and four to get us to the total amount. And I'm trying to look at the page. 4-6, I'm sorry. On 4-8, it gives you the breakdown. Alternate one, there are a couple of doors that were not included. That was not accepted. It would have put us over $100,000, so we had to exclude alternate one and two. We took the base bid and alternate three and four, and that got us to the $89,800.
You said this was a $100,000 project for this year?
Yep.
And we did one for last year, too?
Yep. We have $100,000, and what happens with a $100,000 project, if you do it within the year, the following year, you get your building aid, so we get 79,500 back next year when we spend 100. So it's a way of getting, we had problems with some of our interior doors and exterior doors. Students could walk up to them when they were locked, if they were an exterior door, and sham down them and they opened. So we've replaced several of the ones that were faulty, and the gym doors and the auditorium doors are earmarked for if we can't get what we can't get in this year, we're going to do next year. Do you know specifically what 184A and B are, Alt 1 and Alt 2?
No, I don't. Sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
I don't know what certain doors they are.
Yeah. I don't have the drawing with me. I looked it up. I apologize.
Okay.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. Vince, let me stop for just a second. I asked you before the meeting, and maybe we should mention to the public what's happening with the big project. Where is that?
It has come off the queue. It's in mechanical. It's under
right.
Mechanical review right now. Again, it depends on how long they have or what questions they have. They're still going round and round about the windows, right? You haven't heard a
I haven't heard
solution?
Anything about the windows. I've just okay. That it's under mechanical review. And
yeah.
Talking with Bernie Donegan's office, that you know they're saying late June. I hope it's not that late.
We may lose this summer if it gets too late.
The bids won't come in favorable if we go out and we're bidding at a bad time. Because I have to start projecting a cash flow. Do we borrow?
Right.
And why borrow? We're not going to. It's not a good time to do the work.
The whole year. That's when I'm going to start.
There will be some things that will start, but it wouldn't be the major one. Would be the cafeteria, and we may lose the summer from that standpoint. There's a few other things that Bud has a timeline on, and I'm trying to grasp in my head. I'm not sure.
I think paving was supposed to be done this summer.
Yeah.
And I think those were the two bulk of the projects, the paving and the cafeteria. I guess the decision would really have to be made because of the cafeteria and how it impacts the day-to-day operations. whereas paving you probably could get in during the summer.
Well, if we were to do a cafeteria, right now they're projecting at least Christmas. If they're saying Christmas, I was saying February break to get the cafeteria back, and because there's always some sort of delay. If we don't get a jump on it in late June, the last week in June, to start doing some of the renovations, we may have to just postpone it until next summer. It'll be too late. But in December, the turnaround time was a couple of weeks, and when January, when we submitted it, jumped to 12 weeks, and it has gotten longer since then. So everybody seemed to put building projects in. Beth and I went down to see our project managers, Kirk Owen, and he was saying that he do everything he can, but there was nothing that he could do because it went into mechanical, which is off at his desk. So we just have to wait.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yep.
Okay. Item C. Move approval. Following, recommend the board approve the following resolution to approve a budget transfer in the amount of $18,813 to cover additional costs of ESL services.
Question.
Howard, second.
I had a question about that one. I think Beth has cleared it up. But when you make a budget transfer, where does it come from? Where does it go?
In this case, because you do prudent budgeting, you're going to budget for if a special ed child moves into the district. You know, it's now late in the year. There's some money left there, so I'm able to draw from that money, fortunately.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And no opposed. Move approval of the following. Recommend the board declare the following list of items as surplus. And they are various old electronic equipment. If anybody's interested, they can have this list. Anyone second?
I'll second, but I want to have a question about that. When you have surplus like that, does that go out to bid, or is that just given away?
Depends on what it is. If it's any good, we'll put it out to bid. If it's not, mm-hmm. then we just throw it away.
Is there a policy? I'm not aware of the policy. Is there a policy that school district employees can bid on a school-related item?
If there's a bid, it's a sealed bid, so anybody can bid on
it. Anybody can. Okay.
Nobody is aware. There's a truck that probably will go out for bid, and if we were to scrap it, we'd get at least $500, so there'll be a minimum bid on it, something like that. But other than that, anybody that wants to bid on it, because it's a sealed bid, nobody sees, you know, all of that person get $100, I'll be $101. It's not all of that.
Thank you.
Oftentimes, we just take into account the cost of advertising, if it's even worth it, because you know, we have three newspapers. Sometimes, like in this case, you may be able to sell for scrap. You know, get $100.
And I'm assuming some of the information that's on here, if it's listed, you can probably share it with the teachers or across the district before bringing it to this level?
If it's to this point, it's not functioning.
Okay.
All those in favor, disposing these items?
Aye.
No opposed. Recommend the board approve the following resolution to approve the agreement with Futures Education to provide an educational services analysis for the Cambridge Central School District at a cost of $14,500, with the understanding that payment will only occur if able to find a savings of at least $14,500. Need a second for discussion?
Second.
And Vince, you want to explain it to everybody again?
This is a company that comes in and reviews all our special ed placements and services that we provide, and they evaluate whether or not there's areas that we can save money, do things differently, provide the same services. The gentleman that is going to be working with us, there's a couple of them, but the main individual is John McGuire, and he has done this numerous times, and the conversation we had is that he always finds some money somewhere, so it isn't an issue as to whether or not it will be paid. But they added the little caveat, if they do not make the $14,000 or save us at least $14,500, we don't have to pay them. So it may be, if we're doing everything perfect, it doesn't cost us a penny. If we don't, and we can become more efficient, that's how it
is. We may be able to run this BOCES, have this BOCES aidable if another school district, and I have a couple that have shown interest, piggyback with us.
We were aware that he was talking to other districts, but he couldn't tell us which one, so we surveyed if anybody knew anything about the Futures and what their experience was, and that's how we got a couple other names. So we can go to BOCES, at least one other district. district decides to do it as well.
Is this something that is put out for bid, or is it?
This is, well, the, there aren't a lot of people that do this, and if, since it's really at no cost, if, unless they save us money, it was nothing that we put out for a bid or a quote. I'm not aware of anybody else around here that does anything like that.
Not exactly for special ed. Like, for instance, I just got a phone call today. They'll come and review our utility bills, and if we're being charged incorrectly, you know, they split the savings with us. So it's more of a specialized area, and there's not a lot of people out there, and I think they specialize in special ed.
Does BOCES do the bills? The electric bills?
No, we're not part of that, because we're fuel, not...
It was natural gas they do.
Natural gas, yeah. Carrie has a question.
I have some questions. In regards to this, where it says savings of at least $14,500, in the contract it actually says savings of cost avoidance in there. And the question that I have, and perhaps maybe Vince, you've already asked this question of this contractor, is that I can tell you without even doing a program evaluation, you will be paying this $14,500 because of Medicaid alone. With the credentials that we have in the school district, there, if they're going on the Medicaid component, there are credentials here where we're not being reimbursed due to credentials in Medicaid. So therefore, they're going to easily find $14,500. However, when they find that, you're not going to up and fire a speech and language teacher and hire a speech and language pathologist, where, and you're not going to be able to get reimbursed for the services that this non-credentialed person may, I don't want to say non-credentialed, but you know what I mean, for Medicaid. You're not going to get that money back anyway. So my question really is...
That was part
really
of the discussion.
Is,
yeah. So if it's something like that, it's not... If we don't have the staff and it's going to cost us money to save money, then it's not going to work. It's not going to count for $14,000.
So are they guaranteeing you that as far as the cost saving goes, it has absolutely nothing to do with the credentials for Medicaid? So if they came back and said, you guys are going to be paying $14,500 because in speech services alone, we found where you could have been getting...
I will make sure before that.
Because I guarantee you that's going to be the case.
Oh, yeah. Most of the places have the proper speech.
Absolutely. Test. Same thing with your school psychologist. There's a licensing piece there. There's a lot of money there.
Yep, the counseling aspect. Mm-hmm.
I will find out. Yeah, I definitely would like to see that. The other thing is I don't know because I'm just brand new. Actually, I'm not even sworn in yet, so I appreciate the opportunity to ask questions. I also would question whether there's other people out there that specialize in that. I happen to believe that there are. And so I would recommend that if you haven't, it would be worth taking a look at that to see, and also maybe you've already done this as well, to see what product, what, I noticed that there was references on here, that's great, but just to see if there's other people out there as well.
We can do that. Pretty one table.
If we agree to do this, you can still not sign the contract, right?
I don't know.
Do we have to table?
Yeah, I think it would be best to table it.
Let's table it.
Once you guys agree to enter into a contract, you supersede mine.
Okay. Then we are table.
Thank you.
We will finish discussion next month.
Okay.
Okay, item F, recommend approval of the results of the vote. Recommend the board accept the result of the vote of May 15, 2012 on the 2012-13 budget for public library proposition, bus purchase proposition, and 10% additional state aid for energy savings project, and the election of our two new board members.
Second.
Second from now. Any discussion? And welcome. Add my welcome to Paul's.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And no opposed. Recommend approval of the following resolution. It is hereby resolved that the Board of Education of Cambridge Central School District approves the memorandum of agreement between the Cambridge Central School District and the Cambridge Faculty Association with regard to Article 12, Salary G, Extracurricular Activities, and authorizes the Superintendent of Schools to execute said agreement on behalf of the district. Second from Paul. Any discussion?
I would just like to make a comment that I was very happy that the teachers did this.
Thank you, guys. All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed.
So then put the new one into order.
Yes, we switched.
Yes, that's about that. Yeah. Okay, here comes the Saturday Night Massacre. Recommend approval of the following resolution. Resolved that the Board of Education of the St. Cambridge Central School hereby abolishes the following popular positions effective 30th of June 2012. One full-time position in physical education tenure, one full-time position in the science tenure area, one full-time position in the mathematics tenure area, one part-time position in the music tenure area, one full-time position in the English tenure area, one full-time position in the psychology tenure area, one full-time position in the social studies tenure area, one full-time position in the reading tenure area, one full-time position in the business distributive education area, two full-time positions in the elementary tenure area. The superintendent is directed to notify the affected staff members of this action and offer them preferred eligibility list rights as required by law. So, second from Paul. Any discussion? Nobody's happy about that.
No,
I think that's obvious.
One of the most distasteful things that I think I've ever had to deal with the rules.
One can only hope the legislature and governor wakes up. All those in favor?
Aye.
And no opposed. Recommend approval of the following resolution. Resolved that the Board of Education of Cambridge Central School hereby reduces one full-time foreign language tenure area position to be a part-time 0.5 position effective 1st of September 2012. Second from Paul.
Just one quick comment. At this point, it was a 0.5. It may need to be 0.6 contractually. So if it does, we'll come back and have to increase that.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. And the final, recommend the board approve the following resolution. Resolve that the board abolishes the following positions. One full-time cleaner position effective 1st of July 2012. One full-time bus aide position effective January 1st, 2012. 13, I assume.
No, she left. Right.
Right.
She's gone already.
Yeah, she left mid-year.
Okay. One full-time teacher's aide effective 1st of July 2012. One full-time GED / special education position effective 1st of July 2012. And one full-time teaching assistant position effective January 2nd, 2013. Second from Paul. Any further discussion? All those in favor? None opposed. Howard, you're in shock. I'm sorry. I didn't give you a chance to vote. Okay.
Does he have to read the whole thing?
I'm just going to read the first paragraph. I don't care whether I have to read the whole thing.
I
recommend the board approve the following resolution. A resolution authorizing issuance of $201,482 in serial bonds of the Cambridge Central School District, Washington, and Rensselaer Counties, New York, for the purchase of 166 passenger bus and 170 passenger bus. I need a second.
Second.
There's another page of the authority. I'm not reading.
I just have one thing. I thought the Postar was one of our papers.
Should be.
It's in this
print. Yep, should be.
I'll add it.
Yep.
Okay, with the addition of the Postar, thank you, Lillian. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. Recommend the board approve the following resolution to approve the change order GC-02 with LG White & Sons to decrease the original contract amount by $8,000. Second?
Second. What is the change order?
It's the allowance. The contingent monies that's always set aside and part of the contract for if there's any problems. There wasn't any, so it's a decrease.
Oh, I see. Okay. I know what a change order is.
This was actually a decrease. They go both ways.
Make a change order every single time.
Yeah.
Shocking.
All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. Last item, recommend the board declare the attached list of weeded books from the high school library as surplus, and I'm certainly not going to read all of those.
Okay. Second. Some questions about
Okay, wait, okay, you got a second from Paul. Thank you.
What happens to those books? Are we weeded out?
It's a question that everybody asks.
We try to resell them, but it's difficult. And with the library books, I'm not sure if they're donated somehow. But yeah, we ask if we ever get it.
I'll ask.
Yeah.
Do you have a place for them?
Yeah, we're going to put an auction for raising money. That's what
that's
for sports.
And if there's any first
editions
in there,
there you go.
That's always a topic. It's always a topic. When you go for a nickel and a dime.
Yeah.
Oh,
I know.
I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, if
are they
it's
doing some sort of a price sale?
Well, I'm just thinking,
I know.
Like, I'm thinking of the library, the book sale room, I'm thinking of different, a lot of different places. There's also the talk about possibly doing an auction.
Rare books.
There you go.
Yeah, they're very rare.
There might be a sign. Please.
I talked to Vince about this today, but I never mentioned about Sculpieri. Seeing that they have bought everything and they have no.
We can ask.
Yeah.
What was that?
Sculpieri.
Sculpieri County, they don't have anything.
Sculpieri Central.
There's schools in Vermont that have lost everything.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do you have any list or way of getting to find out?
I guess
if you can, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
It looked like there were a couple hundred books.
Oh wow! Okay.
This would be perfect if it was to go to Skagerrak. I never even thought of that. Most of the time, the difficult part is to find where to send them, and then it's expensive to ship them off.
Yeah, I looked into like a third world country and it was like $16,000. So I'm like, sorry.
How would you take one you go to Australia?
Yeah. You don't just pay a little extra for baggage.
Overhead. Yeah. I didn't think Vermonters could read.
Hey.
Okay, all those in favor. And the fate of the books will be determined by the
bag labor.
Before we quit, Christine, I assume you were here to hear about the Booster Club and raising money. Is that true or not? Because we covered that before you came in.
No, I'm just here.
You're just here.
How'd the lacrosse team do?
We won. And you mentioned lacrosse as part of the mission. In fact,
we're number one in our league. I'm not a sports fan, and I've been keeping track of that. Yeah. Congratulations. Okay, we have another public comment session.
Just a couple of things. One, the sixth grade musical for the field trip, and that's not the reason for this comment. But I just want to say, we went down to Albany, and the kids had a chance to do some things. But it was difficult to the logistics of it because we were gone over a bus run. And I can't say enough about Vince and Randy, how these things work, and how accommodating they are, and figuring out how to make an opportunity like what we did for the kids possible by shuffling buses this way. I can't imagine on either a bus transportation supervisor or superintendent that would do more than what make that kind of opportunity, and we really appreciate it. The second thing is from a teacher standpoint, and I mentioned this at a faculty meeting, Manette Cummings in the elementary library. We've never had a librarian that's open to resource for the elementary students like Matt does. It allows us to send kids for research projects. It's like having a whole resource person available for a teacher that now, we're working with 24, 25, 26 kids in the classroom. She never says no. She helps them even though she's got classes. It's just an amazing resource to have as a teacher to have somebody like that. And the third thing, I just want to thank the board and the board members and the people who have said very kind and supportive things about the Faculty Association. And just to emphasize again that oftentimes things go on behind the scenes that can't be said publicly. And it's easy to bash. There are groups of people that find it easy to bash teachers, but I want to let you know that for months the teachers have been very cognizant of the budget issues and have been working behind the scenes to try and make things happen, even though we couldn't say anything about them. And I just appreciate the kind words from the board members in regards to the teachers.
Thanks.
understand that we put back into it this year and got a very clear, unambiguous answer. And this is something that I look at every year. I've never had any trouble getting the numbers. So I'm sort of curious, Tom, how your numbers differ from the ones that Lillian presented.
I didn't give any numbers. I was speaking in general.
Any question whether our numbers are accurate?
I don't know where they are. I didn't even bother to look, quite frankly.
He said he didn't know where the numbers came from. Do you know where the numbers came from?
This isn't something that you look at when you look at the budget? I mean, it's a comparison of actual spending.
You know how much money will be in the fund balance come July, June 30th, whenever the edge is?
Not with any absolute certainty.
We don't know yet.
It's a projection.
You have an estimate of you could do a projection.
But Ronnie, my point was not whether the number was accurate. It doesn't really matter to me whether it's accurate. It's just the whole idea of budgeting to the penny or budgeting with extra expenditures in mind that may come up. That was my point. That's my only point.
Okay.
The exact amount doesn't
really
matter.
I was just curious where the ambiguity would come in.
It's not ambiguity. It's a philosophical way of approaching it. You cannot come back and ask you folks for money in February or April if we run out.
No, that's not part of your comment on this question. That's fine. If there isn't any ambiguity, that's all. That was my only question. I was confused why there would be.
We don't know what the fund balance will be until the end of the budget year.
Well, you know what it was for that. There were several years of numbers. But if there's no disagreement, that's fine. That was my question. Is there a disagreement? I guess
nope.
Not.
Nope. Okay. I move we adjourn the regular meeting, and we will continue the executive session that we were in for the open meeting.
Second.
Howard seconds. All those in favor?
Questions.
No opposed.
Yes.